Hello and welcome to another lactose-filled hour, or lactose-free hour, actually, if we're talking cheese, of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. I wanted to thank our sponsors, which tonight is Wisconsin Cheese Originals, as well as our awesome producer, Jack Inslee. So today we're stretching the curd a bit further than usual. Our topic is cheese and rock and roll, or music of any kind, for that matter. We don't discriminate. My guest today is Chris Gray, former record mogul and current cheese maker at Consider Bardwell Farm in West Paulet, Vermont. And Chris has been kind enough to come and chat with me about his move from the musical world to the agricultural world. But before I interview Chris, I just wanted to let all of our listeners out there know that we are really doing some groundbreaking journalism here. I stumped Google when I typed in cheese and rock and roll. There was like nothing that came up. I was like, I wonder what's out there. So the results that I did get were pretty strange and far reaching. And, these were some of the things that I came up with. There's a band, the String Cheese Incident, which, I've heard the name. I don't know if I could sing any of their songs. There's apparently a rapper out there, called Mims, who wrote a song called Say Cheese. And you know, rappers actually do have a little bit of a heritage with, you know, cheese, you know, talking about the cheese and the cheddar and, you know, making the cheddar, spending the cheese. Oh, very nice. Jack is all over the music. This is Mims, everybody. there's also apparently a lounge singer in Los Angeles who calls himself Richard Cheese, who does, renditions of Rock the Casbah and stuff like that. There's a Ween song called Pork Roll, Egg and Cheese. And then, you know, another rap song called...
They also have a album, Chocolate and Cheese.
They do?
Ween, yeah, titled...
Chocolate and Cheese.
Yeah.
Awesome.
A fine combination.
A fine combination.
And the subject of a whole album, apparently.
Well, that's awesome. Well, maybe we can, like, you know, play that when we're having dinner at Roberta's after this and relish our show. I guess I kind of figured wrongly that cheese would be a musical muse right up there on par with, like, drugs and sex, but I was wrong. We are incredibly lucky to have right here in the Heritage Radio Network studio a man such as you who knows both industries inside and out. So thanks for being on the show with us today, Chris.
Thanks, Ann. It's nice to be here with you.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Very exciting.
Cheese is always exciting.
Cheese is always exciting.
As is music.
Yes, yes. And especially when we get to talk about it on the radio.
Definitely.
As opposed to, you know, in the cheese room where we usually would be talking about it. So tell us about you. Tell us about your musical background. Where did you grow up and how did you end up in the music industry and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, it was really the only practical skill I learned at college.
Playing music or listening to music?
Listening to music, working with music. I helped run the concert board and put on shows.
And where did you go to college?
Hamilton College. It's a liberal arts school in upstate New York.
Oh, great.
Where they teach you everything and nothing at the same time.
I went to art school. I know
all
about
that.
Yeah,
totally. So I left there and I realized the only real thing I knew how to do was make things happen with music. So
yeah,
I started working at a label called Ryko Disc.
Okay.
Which was in Salem, Massachusetts at the time.
Uh-huh.
Which was not far from where I grew up in Worcester, Mass.
Oh, Worcester.
Yeah.
All right. I
Home
know.
Of the Diner.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, sure.
The Diner. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Originator
That's a little
of the
bit
Diner.
Of Heritage Radio Network sure. trivia.
The smiley face.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
There's all sorts of
that
stuff.
Was that
That's
scene
a whole other show.
That was that scene in Forrest Gump when he like he was running through Worcester and put his face on the t-shirt and made the smiley face.
Exactly. And so I interned at Ryko Disc for a long time and finally ended up getting a job there running the Hannibal Records label, which was a small kind of British-based imprint.
Okay.
Where we did a lot of folk music, world music.
Okay.
Niche stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
every band you've ever heard on NPR but never heard of before.
I was thinking, actually, when you told me that before on the phone, that, you know, there are some things about cheese and or farmstead cheese and this kind of music, they have a lot in common. You know, it's like farmstead cheese, it's handmade, just like the music. Mm-hmm. There's a limited audience.
Like, yes, the definitely. Music.
And to some people, it just stinks. You know?
Yes, absolutely. We had a lot of those records. Like Finnish accordion music.
Ooh, that sounds great.
Oh, it was fantastic.
I love accordion.
Yeah, but you know, you could sell a few back then.
Sure.
This was some time
I
ago.
I would still buy a few, more than a few, for my own collection.
Yeah, yeah. And but I work with artists like Kate and Anna McGarrigle. If you know Kate McGarrigle, she's Rufus Wainwright's mom.
Oh, yeah.
And she's the reason he is so good.
Okay. Okay. And his sister, too, is a musician, right?
Yeah, Martha.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of world music, like Ali Farkatoure, the great former Mali and blues musician.
Okay.
Cubanismo, which is a band from Cuba. Okay. I helped organize the first tour of a Cuban band in the U.S. since the embargo.
Wow.
18-piece Descarga band.
Awesome.
Crazy.
And when was that?
That had to be 96 or 7.
Because I remember when Buena Vista Social Club hit the scene, that was like a huge deal. You know, like everyone loved Buena Vista Social Club, so you were way ahead of the
curve. We were ahead of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they, of course, made all the money.
God. Again, there's so many parallels to the cheese world.
Exactly. You break the ground, right?
Yeah. And somebody else comes along. And...
Yeah. Yeah. But it was great. It was a great experience. And always worked with great music, which is hard to do.
Absolutely.
In the music business.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Because like cheese, there's a lot of schlock.
A lot of processed music out
there. A lot of processed music. A lot of remixed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Stuff. So you were with them for how long?
Oh, geez, 5 or 6 years. And then we were purchased, the company was purchased by Chris Blackwell, formerly of Island Records.
Okay.
And we all got moved to New York.
From
Salem,
Massachusetts. From Salem, okay.
Yeah, yeah, which was an adventure.
Wow. Were you excited or were you like, why are we moving to New York?
No, I was excited. It was about time.
Okay. Okay.
It resisted the magnetic pull for long enough.
That's actually kind of amazing that you were organizing all this amazing stuff from a little town like Salem, you know, when there's just, you know, I would imagine you're the only outfit of your kind.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, to be, you know, I was always into independent music because, you know, major labels didn't really appeal to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the point of view of Ryko was... to be out there on purpose.
Right, right.
And, you know, we had a lot of catalog, like the whole Frank Zappa catalog.
Wow.
Which, of course, relates to cheese.
How?
Ah, Susie Cream Cheese.
Oh.
It's one of the great legends of the Zappa kind of pantheon of imaginary stars and beings.
Susie Cream Cheese.
Susie Cream Cheese.
It's funny, I stayed.
She was a groupie.
She was a, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I
you
have
make
to
your
admit.
Own, you know. Associations.
Oh, right. I'm a Midwestern girl. I never get these jokes until way too late. Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah. that's not a moniker I'd want to go down with, but I'm glad it's out there.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And it's funny. I actually stayed with some cheesemakers in France who were obsessed with Frank Zappa. I thought that was pretty funny.
There are those that are and those that aren't.
Yeah.
It's kind of like goat cheese.
That's true.
You know?
That's
people
true.
Love it or they just can't stand it.
Yeah.
So put on some Frank Zappa and you can tell who's who.
And maybe there's also an equivalent, because there are some goat cheeses out there that you can fool people with. You know, you can like give them a taste and they're like, oh, that's great. And then you tell them, oh, that, you know,
yes.
It's a goat cheese.
Right, sure.
And they're like, what? I don't like goat cheese. So maybe there's a Frank Zappa song.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That could convert people who don't think they like Frank Zappa.
Yeah, he did a lot of symphonic music, music with the London Symphony.
Okay.
You would never know it until you told someone.
That's crazy.
That's great stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So a little bit like you, a Renaissance man.
Yeah, exactly.
Can do everything.
Yeah.
So you were with the record label for a while, and then what What sort of started your interest with cheese?
Oh, that was back in Worcester.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. In the old school days.
Okay.
The cheese shop.
Oh.
Which was a small chain of cheese shops in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic.
Okay.
In the mid-80s. Which, ahead of its time, speaking of ahead of its time.
Very much. Had, and in they, Worcester, too.
Yeah, like, of course.
Where there was no, I mean, I grew up in Chicago. There was no cheese shop in Chicago.
Yeah,
I mean, at all.
Right. And they were. It was a small chain.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there in high school, kind of summer jobs and at the holidays helping them out.
Okay.
It was run by this crazy Lithuanian Charlie. It was just, he could smile at someone and just say the most rude and awful thing to them, and they would totally buy it, you know.
God, there are some people this, out there.
Just so talented.
The most talented retailers.
Oh, he could sell the Limburger, you know, to the most unsuspecting person.
That is great. That
but we had like 200 kinds of cheese.
Wow.
Yeah.
And mostly European stuff?
All,
or?
Almost all.
Okay.
With the glowing exception of the Capri, the fresh goat from Westfield.
Oh, okay.
And she used to come, the original
Westfield,
farmer, she used to come.
That's a pioneer, American cheese original from Westfield, Mass.
Yeah, yeah. And she used to come down with her cooler.
Wow.
And bring us fresh chev. And it was the only American other than cheddar.
Okay,
You know, really, that we were carrying.
Is that how people from Worcester say cheddar?
Yeah, Charlie Cheddar. Charlie Cheddar used to come in. He's a bus driver. Hey, where's my cheddar? And it's not sharp enough.
Oh,
you got anything sharper?
Yeah.
Well, we got the Grafton four-year-old, Charlie.
What's your sharpest cheddar? We used to get that question all the time back when I worked at Murray's. That was like everyone's least favorite question.
Yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
So I did that for about 4 years on and off, you know, helping them out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my cheese education. They had, of course, they were total hedonists. So we had a very liberal sampling policy.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would just eat cheese and, you know, I didn't know what Morbier was till I was there.
Oh, yeah.
And I was never the same after.
Who would?
Who would?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's like, it's
and
crazy.
They used to get some raw milks in back in the day.
Wow. Raw milk cheeses or raw milk?
Yeah, cheeses, yeah. Morbiers and certain things. And there is still, I believe, one cheese shop left in Concord, Massachusetts.
Well, we got to go.
Peter Lovis. Fantastic. Okay. Shout out to Concord, Mass and Peter.
Okay. Everybody
great
go
shop.
Visit the cheese shop in Concord, Mass.
Yeah, they carry the fine Consider Bardwell Farm cheeses as well.
Very, very good.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Consider Bardwell is the farm that you work at now.
Correct.
Not that you work at. You're a partner in the farm.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is
with
amazing.
Angela and Russell and Peter, our cheesemaker.
I was thinking, you know, speaking of, you know, rock stars, I feel like Peter is a little bit of a rock star in the cheese world. Wouldn't you say?
I'd say so.
Peter Dixon, everybody. He knows more about cheese than just about anybody else.
Yeah. It's kind of like a throwback 70s vibe he has going.
Exactly.
You know?
Oh, yeah, he's great. I like to call him also the Johnny Appleseed of the American cheese world because he has been everywhere. I mean, he's a very interesting character. He kind of is a cheese consultant. He's worked on a lot of different farms, developed a lot of different cheeses for a lot of different people, had a background in dairy, went to UVM, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dairy
school
there and worked for Land O'Lakes for a while.
Yeah.
And really traveled around and was in some very weird places making cheese and dairy products for Land O'Lakes. I remember he was in like Turkey or something.
Macedonia.
Yeah,
he went on a grant to Macedonia, I know, for a while. But when he graduated high school when he was 18, his family started a camembert business. So he was thrown into it.
Wow.
So he's been making cheese in Vermont for 30-ish years.
Wow.
I mean, it's hard to find anyone in the United States who's been doing that, let alone on a farmstead level, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So he's got crazy knowledge, crazy experience, and he landed at Consider Bardwell Farm, which is a fitting place. That's the site of the first dairy co-op in the state of Vermont.
Correct. Yep. From the 1860s.
Okay.
It's the first major cheesemaking co-op in the state. And the original family that farmsteaded the land were the Bardwells.
Okay.
And the son was Consider Stebbins Bardwell.
Consider Stebbins.
A long line of Consider Bardwells in that family.
Wow.
And he was another entrepreneur of the day.
Okay.
Had a cheesemaking operation there. He made edge tools, axes, adzes, those kinds of hard, sharp things.
that Vermonters needed to cut down wood.
Had a slate quarry.
Wow.
Harvested peat on the land for fuel.
Okay. Okay. That's incredible. So this place is an incredibly rich place with in terms of cheesemaking history.
Definitely. And Angela Miller and Russell Glover, who were the founding partners, purchased the farm in 2001 while it was still intact and, you know, just barely in the nick of time kind of thing.
Right. Was it a working dairy farm when they bought it?
It was. It was the Nelsons who owned it. It was after the Bardwells, it was the Nelsons.
Oh, wow. So just two owners all that time. Yeah, that's really unusual.
Yeah, it was called Nelsonville from the 1930s to the mid-90s. And then old man Nelson passed away, and his widow was living there, and she sold it to Angela and Russ.
Okay.
And so they kind of discovered the history of the farm and decided to restart the cheese making there. So it's an ongoing renovation of the farm and kind of reimagining and restarting of the cheese tradition.
Well, that seems like a great place to start off with. We actually have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about how Angela and Russell started the farm and how you met them and where your cheese is headed.
Fantastic.
Stay with us. So we are back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. Do you think Ali Farkatwar is singing about cheese right now?
It's Bambara for something. It could be cheese. You know, they're nomadic.
Yeah.
I'm sure they had goats and carrying milk in stomachs.
Yeah.
The old-fashioned way, the original way.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's
a little heat from the sun and the sand.
A little heat from the sun
and
the sand.
Who needs a cheese vat when you have a desert?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this is a beautiful music. I'm glad that you have brought it to my attention, because you know I think too much about cheese and not enough about other stuff. So
fantastic.
So we were talking about Angela and Russell, who are the co-founders of Consider Bardwell Farm. And they, where you have made cheese for how long now? How long have you been at Consider Bardwell?
3-ish years, more than 3 years. It's kind of a blur.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you jump into something like that, it tends to be.
Yeah. Yeah. But the farm was restarted about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And they were making fresh cheese there, fresh goat cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Angela started with 6 goats for fun.
Okay.
And then things quickly got out of control.
As they kind of tend to do with goats and that sort of like agrarian dream, you know?
Definitely.
Now, Angela is a literary agent, right?
Yep. She has a small agency in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes back and forth from the city to the farm.
Which is very hard.
Yep.
Very hard and very rare that somebody can manage two careers like that.
We call it the double reverse commute. Because she goes back and forth, and Russell is an architect, and so he's back and forth as well. He's our master tinkerer. So she's kind of
master tinkerer.
Yes,
I like that title.
Yeah. Oh, it's official. He's literally kind of done the building out of the farm and the conversion of it to a cheese making operation.
Wow.
And not in the way of hiring contractors to do so, but in the way of laying brick himself and wiring it and plumbing it and everything.
Yeah. No, you got to have somebody like that on the farm.
Oh,
it's like imperative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only problem is he's the only one that knows all that stuff and no one else does. So
it's
trouble.
Maybe that could be your next sort of field of study.
It could be. I need an apprenticeship with Russell after apprenticing with Peter. But
can learn how to build cheese caves and go around the country and get rich building everyone a cheese cave.
Keep dreaming.
Yeah, I know. Just kidding.
Yeah.
But so how did you meet Angela and Russell?
You know, some old friends of mine from Boston days moved up to West Pollet for no reason, which is really the only reason you would move to West Pollet.
It's a cute little town.
It is a cute little town. There's the post office, there's Dutchie's store, and that's about it.
Dutchie's.
But it's the it's where all the slate from Vermont comes from. So it's a slate quarry town, an old kind of blue-collar industrial town.
Okay.
Kind of like where I grew up in Worcester, so I kind of felt an affinity for it. But
absolutely.
But my friends moved up there because they found a really cool old place.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually an old coal bin.
Were they were they in the music world as well?
My friend's a musician, plays, and then his wife's a teacher.
Okay.
So I just, you know, would go up and visit them from the city, and we drive past the farm, and I'd think, what goes on there?
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I got a call from Angela, and she said, oh, I met your friends, and I need some help in the city, because mm-hmm. I was living at the city at the time.
Okay.
Still working in the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
And getting tired of the music industry as it circled the drain.
Sure.
You know?
It was that sort of beginning of the end of the music industry as we know it.
Yes,
happened
as we
then.
Know it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Exactly. Wow. So we only have started to hear about it in the last like couple of years, I feel like. Maybe like 2-3 years.
Yeah, it started happening about 5 years after I started, and I spent another 8 years in it.
Wow.
So I was, you know, I saw it all happen. So
wow.
It's kind of a shame.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of the really good creative people left, and you stop being able to, like, you know, invest in an artist and develop an artist and bring a 18-piece band from Cuba over.
Yeah.
You know, that would never happen now. But back then, when I started, you could do things like that.
Right.
You know, I was working for Palm Pictures for Chris Blackwell's label, and was doing a lot of, like, more electronic stuff and kind of more current, trendy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with this band, 07. I signed them for the U.S.,
okay.
Fantastic band.
Wow.
Fans of cheese, I know.
Oh, good.
British.
Absolutely. Oh, well, the Brits,
British.
They've got it in their blood.
They do.
They do. They have to have
you
it.
Know. Well, another British music reference.
Yeah.
The Ruddles.
The Ruddles. Don't know it.
Chocolate and cheese. I'm sorry. Cheese and onions.
Cheese and onions.
Cheese and onions.
Okay.
The Ruddles were the Monty Python send up of the Beatles. 1968, '69. They were like mock Beatles.
What would that be? The Meatles?
Exactly.
The Meekles?
Yeah, they were the Ruddles.
Yeah, the Ruddles.
But they did a cheese and onions classic.
Wow.
Also later covered by Galaxy 500, great
okay.
Boston band.
See, you've got all yeah. this cheese and rock knowledge.
Well, you're going to need to dig a little, but it's out there.
Oh, and speaking of the Brits, that was my one entree into this idea for this uh-huh. show, was that I had heard somewhere that the guy from Blur is now making cheese.
That's correct. I believe he has a cheese farm somewhere.
In the countryside, in England somewhere, or Ireland, or, yeah, I forget exactly where.
Yeah, I heard about it too, but I don't know the details.
Music and cheese also, I guess there in America there's one, So Young, from Andante Creamery.
Oh, right.
She's a classically trained cellist, I
oh,
believe,
no
or violinist.
Yeah.
Sorry, So Young. I wish I knew which one it was. But yeah, she makes goat cheeses now out in California.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, there's definitely something similar. There's that kind of meditative kind of thought process and the, let's face it, the sort of rigorous monotony of just going through the same sort of stuff every day and reworking it that musicians can probably get down with. When it comes to making cheese.
Writing a song would be like aging a cheese, maybe.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you just write it and it's ready, like a fresh cheese.
Yeah.
Sometimes you write it and it's not quite right and you gotta ruminate.
Ruminate?
A little bit on it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Work it, rework it, age it.
Age it.
Put it in the cave.
Mm-hmm.
Wash it, turn it, flip it.
Uh-huh.
Wash it, turn it, flip it. Wash it, turn it.
Try it. Wash it, turn it, flip it some more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when it's ready, you know?
Absolutely.
You send it to the counter. You put it on stage. Why not?
And it has a solo. Or at least your cheeses do at my cheese shop all the time.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. Consider Bardwell cheeses are great. So can you tell us a little bit about the cheeses that you guys make now?
Sure. Yeah. We're making goat's milk cheese from the goats on the farm. We have about 100 Oberhasli Swiss Alpine goats. Mm-hmm. And we make a raw goat tome called Manchester, which is fantastic.
That is a fantastic cheese.
Yeah.
And that, and all your cheeses take their names from neighboring towns, isn't
that
right?
They do. It's a little more traditionalist kind of bent we have there, kind of playing to the history of the farm. So there's Manchester, which is the big town near us, Manchester, Vermont. We make also cow's milk cheese from, we have a partner farm in Chester, Vermont.
Okay.
The Jersey Girls Dairy.
The Jersey Girls. I love that. Jersey cows.
Jersey
not
cows.
Not real Jersey Girls. They stay in New Jersey.
Yeah. And so we bring milk from Lisa's farm over every couple of days. We hand carry it in cans the old-fashioned way.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
Because when Peter told me that he was bringing milk in cans to the farm, I was just like, oh my God, Peter, you are so crazy. A milk can weighs a lot.
Yeah, it's 10 gallons capacity.
Mm-hmm. It,
the can itself weighs about 10 pounds. You got 8.6 pounds per gallon of milk, so you got 86 pounds of milk. So you got about 100 pounds a can.
Yeah.
You got anywhere from 10 to 15 of those on a pickup.
Okay.
When we go down, so.
Riding real low on the suspension there.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need the heavy-duty truck. No toy trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, part of it is just the reality of being a small farm. It's not like we have milk trucks.
Sure.
Or could afford milk trucks.
Yeah, yeah.
And part of it is that we don't want to pump the milk. If you hand carry it, it's never pumped, and the milk fat stays whole. You're not agitating it.
When you pump the milk, you kind of disrupt the fat molecules? Is that it? You kind of break them up?
You break them up.
And start to, okay.
Yeah, starts to break down.
And with Jersey milk, you've got more fat than usual even. So that milk is rich and you want it to stay intact.
Exactly. Because then later it's going to be a nicer made cheese. It's going to be a longer aging cheese with the milk fats intact.
Yeah.
So we kind of believe in that principle.
Yeah.
It helps us rationalize lifting and carrying each one.
Well, you guys are beasts, you know?
Yeah.
You don't need to like work out.
Exactly.
You don't need
to go
to the gym.
We call that our health plan.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then you get good cheese and good food on the other end of it.
Exactly.
So, you know, that seems like a pretty good... We should talk to the Obamas about that.
We should.
Healthcare is, you know, become a farmer.
Yeah.
You know?
Work camp.
Yeah.
So from that milk, we make... three different raw milk aged cow's cheeses. One called Dorset, which is a soft wash rind.
Mm-hmm. Which is like the American Reblochon. It is so good.
Thank you.
Yes.
And named after Dorset, Vermont, which is a kind of shishi, buttery resort town south of us.
Full of outlet malls, I've heard.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Is it outlet malls?
That's Manchester.
Oh, that's Manchester.
Dorset is like perfect white and green and bucolic and
I should know that when we brought people up to the farm
and wealthy
that's where we went went to Dorset. So Dorset was a marble town and Paulet was a slate town.
Yeah, exactly. And we also have a cheese called Paulet, which is a more kind of everyday workingman cheese.
Yep,
a Toma style.
This is the best grilled cheese you'll ever have.
And Anne knows that from having grilled many a cheese herself.
I wonder how many grilled cheeses we made this summer. We made a grilled cheese sandwich at the Brooklyn Flea with the Paulet cheese, McClure's spicy pickles, and a Tomcat focaccia pocket, which were so good.
Yeah. Couldn't keep them away from those.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing. So I like the Paulet a lot. I like the working man's cheese.
It is a good working man's cheese. But, you know, kids love that cheese. Mm-hmm. Great for a grilled cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of fancy pants restaurants like that cheese, too.
Exactly.
Because it's damn good milk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's deep.
Absolutely.
And we also make a more classic kind of working man's cheese, the Rupert, which
you guys won an award for this year at the American Cheese Society.
We did indeed.
What did you guys place with that cheese?
Well, we took a first place in the category for aged Wacheron cheese, and it won third best in show overall.
Which is incredible because there were 1,300 cheeses in the show. So yeah. Third overall so in the show. That's awesome.
The number three cheese in the USA.
In the USA.
And I don't have a stitch of it ready yet.
Really?
Wait a month. It's coming back.
Okay. Okay. So,
So that's a big Alpine style wheel that we age 1 year.
Oh, wow. Yep. Full year.
Full year. We're trying to be patient, you know?
Yep.
Like, let the fermentation happen fully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's named for Rupert, Vermont, which is one of the oldest towns in Vermont, just down the road from us. So that's our big cheese.
The big old cheese. Well, again, like music, you know, it takes a while. Like a musician's not going to be ready right away.
Yeah, the first album can be good. You know, sometimes that's a fluke. The second album is almost always not as good. But if you hang in there for the fourth or fifth, sometimes you get the good stuff.
Can see how it develops.
Yeah, exactly.
Over time.
Yeah.
That's hysterical. So did you ever represent any bands from Wisconsin?
Gee, I don't think so. Really? No.
I was thinking, you know, if there were cheesy bands out there, maybe a good place for them to come from.
Yeah. No, I never did. Mostly it was international groups I worked with.
Yeah.
So, you know, Caribbean, I worked with a lot of classic reggae and, not a lot of cheese.
Not a lot of cheese there. It's true.
Africa, Brazil.
Yeah. A little bit of fresh cheese in Brazil, but I guess it's true. It's not really cheese country. Well, what about bringing music to the farm? What do you think about that? Do you guys ever think about making a cheese album of your own? You can get Peter on the, on the cheese vat, like drumming on the cheese vat.
We could microphone. I'll ask Russ if we can mic up the establishment.
Oh, he could do it. And maybe you could play like the cheese, the cutter, like a harp or a guitar or something, because that has all the wires and strings.
You could get a nice resonance in the hayloft.
Absolutely.
You know? Absolutely. Or in the cheese cave.
There you go.
Washing of cheeses.
I think I want to consider Bardwell soundtrack for sure. We can play it at the shop at the Essex Market.
We would definitely be breaking new ground, I think.
All right. Well, we unfortunately run out of time on the show, but that's kind of perfect. We'll get to work on our cheese album, and then we can debut it on the Heritage Radio Network.
Fantastic.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming and being on the show.
My pleasure, Anne.
And let's keep making that cheddar.